This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Monuente Reme. I played Icheb on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Liam Smart, and with me, as always, is...
Zachary Frueling.
Well, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing great. Sorry I missed our last episode. It's good to be recording with you. Suzanne's not with us today.
No.
What's her excuse?
I reckon she's got, like, temporal aphasia or something, whatever happened in relativity, with all the time zones that we've been dealing with recently. Well, Zach, we aren't the only ones that are sitting here, are we?
No, we're joined by our good friend, Amy Nelson, and our newer friend, Joe Keegan, from Earl Grey, to talk about fan favorite Borg episodes in Voyager. Part two of our discussion of fan favorite Voyager Borg episodes.
Borg episodes, exactly. So if anyone has listened to Earl Grey 323, which released on Tuesday, we discussed the TNG and Enterprise episodes Regeneration, Best of Both Worlds, Q Who, Descent, and I, Borg. Not in that order, mind you. And today, on To The Journey, we're going to be continuing that discussion with Scorpion, Drone, Dark Frontier, Unimatrix Zero, and Endgame. So, Amy and Joe, how are you both? Welcome to TTJ.
Hi.
Hi. This is not my first time. I was on To The Journey before, where we talked Troy episodes. That's right. So wonderful.
You were the goddess of math, not the goddess of empathy.
That's right.
Amy Nelson, goddess of math. What is Joe Keegan god of?
Of anything that Amy is goddess of, but better.
That's what I was expecting. So yeah, Amy, do you want to just quickly let our listeners know about the whole idea of fan sets? Because we haven't done a fan sets thing on Voyager before, I don't believe, other than maybe the Troy episodes. I'm not sure because I forgot what you said on that one.
Do you remember, Joe, what year these came out? I can't remember, like mid-2000s. And the fans...
2006.
Thank you. The fans voted...
I just made that up, Amy. I've no idea.
Okay. Well, somewhere around there. It sounded good. And so
2003.
Okay. Yeah. So the fans voted, and they did like specific Klingon episodes or Borg episodes or time travel episodes or Captain's favorite episodes. So we have been going through them on Earl Grey, covering specifically the ones with the Next Generation. But we thought it would be fun to do this crossover because the Borg really are covered extensively in Next Gen and even more so in Voyager. So we thought it would be fun to do a little crossover with you guys. So that's what we're doing.
Not just the Borg, defanged, friendlier Borg.
Oh. Sure, whatever.
That's up to your own opinion there, Zach.
True. Can I just correct myself? When, Amy, you asked me when the fan collectives were released, And I said 2006, yes. Randomly making something up.
Uh-huh.
And then I went on Memory Alpha, and the first year that I saw was 2003.
Oh.
But that is not when they were released.
Okay.
And they were actually released in 2006 and 2007.
I knew.
So my first random lie guess was the correct one.
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Well done, Joe.
Thanks.
So before we start this, obviously there's only five episodes that we'll be discussing today, but there are many, many, many Borg-related episodes in Voyager that haven't made this list. Things like Child's Play, Infinite Regress, Raven, the list goes on, Unity. So
the one with the vinculum, what was that? Because that's a weird word.
Oh, I just love that word, isn't it?
Vinculum sounds kind of rude.
All of season four of Voyager is a Borg episode.
That is true, yeah. Anything with Seven of Nine. Here we go. I'm just going to look this up for you, Joe, because okay. I just wanted to... Yes, Infinite Regress, the Vinculum.
Okay.
Which I find is probably one of the better Borg episodes. I quite enjoyed Infinite Regress.
The Omega Directive?
That was partially related to the Borg, the Omega Directive. That's just Seven of Nine liking her perfection.
Hmm.
Okay, so let's get started with the first episode, Scorpion, which has two parts, the season 3 and 4 ending and beginning episode, which does introduce Seven of Nine. So this is where Voyager finally come across a vast region of space in the Delta Quadrant that's controlled by the Borg, and they've got to try and find a way through it. But there seems to be a foil for the Borg as well in Species 8472. So I'm going to start with you, Amy. What did you think about Scorpion?
You know, I really liked it. I don't remember really seeing any of these first run, so I'll just say that up front. So when I was watching these, as I said on Earl Grey, I had watched the Voyager episode ones probably November, December, and then this got pushed, and then I looked at these episodes, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't remember anything. So I rewatched them again. I'm wondering... Is Kes supposed to be the Troi? And I know this is off topic, not about Borg, but Kes being telepathic and speaking to this 8472 and that she has these feelings and premonitions. Because you know my love of Troi, I get very protective and I was feeling threatened by Kes and her abilities.
Well, yeah, they kind of hand wave a bit on what exactly her special powers are. Sometimes it's telekinesis, sometimes it's telepathy, and they don't really flesh it out, and then she leaves, so we don't really ever find out, right?
No, but her powers aren't fully developed. They're developing, so we don't know. That's why it's all hand waved at the moment. I wouldn't say she's a Troi in a counselor respect. We just know that the Accumpans were incredibly powerful before they went underground because of the caretaker.
Because they're solar powered.
Solar powered Accumpan. What?
So what season is Scorpion? I forgot to write that down. Do you?
It's end of season 3, beginning of season 4. So okay. It aired at the exact same time in the series as Best of Both Worlds.
Oh, excellent. That's
yeah, maybe even a kind of homage to Best of Both Worlds in a way.
Yeah. I really like that Janeway, when she's doing her research, she's like calling back to, you know, the captains and the previous entries who have encountered the Borg because she's really trying to, you know, work her way through this Northwest Passage. I like that when you say defang the Borg, that we have the Borg. And we also get introduced to 8472, which is now this zombie scary that we can't reason with. So it sort of does the handoff from the Borg to 8472.
For like a week, though, until they defang species 8472 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
I'll find that out later.
if Voyager defanged the Borg, they really defanged species 8472 way too quickly, I think.
Mm-hmm. But you see, that's interesting that you say, like, you bring up the defang comment, because I feel like it brings the Borg back to scary. Even though we got 8472 that are going to be defeating them in this or on the track of defeating them until Voyager comes along, it brings back the fear that the Borg should put into people in this episode. Because let's face it, we always knew that Voyager was going to be coming across the Borg because they're in the Delta Quadrant. They'd have to go across their region of space. But also we got to remember that this was not the first time we saw the Borg in Voyager either.
Right.
We saw them at the sort of like a Marvel-style end credit scene at the end of Blood Fever. And then we saw them in that Chakotay episode, Unity, where they found like some Borg people sort of left the collective, which is sort of a precursor to the idea of bringing Seven of Nine onto the show as well, which is what actually convinced Brannon Braga to put an ex-Borg onto Voyager, was the episode Unity. But then we finally get to the point in Scorpion where, oh crap, we've got a huge amount of Borg space to cover, and then we've got the Northwest Passage to try and fit through. So to me, I thought it was a really enjoyable episode. What about you, Joy? Joy, your new name's Joy now.
Hi! I think this episode has one of the best cold opens that we see. We see those two Borg cubes and they're like, resistance is futile, you will be assimilated, all that stuff. And then they just blow up. There's energy that we don't know yet, but it's the species 8472 energy weapons. Just completely obliterate them. And then jump ahead onto the bridge of the of Voyager. I can't say the Voyager. Have you guys ever come across that?
It's like just Voyager.
Yeah, you say Voyager, but you would say the Enterprise.
Yeah, and there, I think there's in the early in season one of Voyager, there's an instance where they call it the Voyager, and it only happens a couple times. Yeah,
it sounds weird to my brain, so I just call it Voyager. Yeah,
that's what it's. We just do Voyager. Yeah,
cool. Harry says, "I'm reading two Borg cubes. Make that 3, 4, no, 5, 15 Borg vessels, and then they all rush past, and you're like, wah!" It's like all hell's broken loose. But they just rushed by Voyager. They weren't coming to assimilate Voyager. They were basically running for their lives, weren't they?
Mm.
You've got to give Voyager some credit for taking the Borg and making them writ large. You know, not just one cube, 15 Borg cubes. That was
Voyager
cool.
Is very good at that.
Yeah, making everything big and massive. I think about the point with defanging the Borg, the way I've always seen it is that Voyager is just one little science ship lost far from home, and any time they encounter the Borg, they always come out winning, which I always find a little bit unbelievable. Yeah, it's very enjoyable episodes, and I like it when Voyager always wins, but I think that's where the defanging comment comes from. It just seems a bit like one little science vessel. It's not even a warship. It's a science vessel with a crew of like 130 something people on it against big bad Borg cubes with 50,000 drones on them.
But with an amazing captain, though.
I think that's the point. It's Janeway.
Her ingenuity and her ability to adapt.
She does a deal with the devil.
Now, a lot of people think that the deal with the devil here was a bad decision from Janeway. Which, not to rehash an episode that we just did with me and Suzanne, but is interesting that we've actually gone to the Borg to try and help them to serve our own purpose of trying to get through their space.
Well, and that's why it's called Scorpion, because Chakotay tells, you know, the fable of the scorpion riding on the back of the fox to cross the river and, you know, why did you sting me? Well, that's who I am, and now we're both going to drown or whatever.
The Borg are not going to change their ways.
Right, yeah. So that was interesting, and so that's why how I can remember Scorpion is because of that story.
Yeah.
But I like that we're still, even in this episode, still talking about this individuality and uniqueness, you know, and how, like, the Borg are saying that the conflicted nature is our undoing, that your individuality is, you know, what makes you weak. Sort of to contrast, the Borg has strength because of our unity and our collectiveness.
Well, yeah, and the fact that when Janeway and Tuvok are on the Borg ship to try and create the weapon, they just want to assimilate, not fully assimilate, but link their minds to the collective because it's just more efficient for the Borg to work.
Speed things up,
Which, I mean, makes sense. I think I've said before into the journey that I'd like to be Borg for a day, but is an interesting concept. One of my things I liked most about this episode, though, was the fact that it's called the Northwest Passage, just because it's the, you know, like that really harsh, unnavigatable part at the top of Canada. And I always find it funny that they named it that, because it was really, really hard to get through. And it was the only, well, one of you know what?
Is that the waterway?
It's the waterway that goes up the top, and it's often ice in the Arctic Ocean. And it was the only way around between the Pacific and at the Atlantic before the Panama Canal was built was at the bottom of South America, I think Drake's Passage. And then they've got this place at the top that they want to get through, but it's always unnavigatable. And then they call this passage the Northwest Passage. It's just like, why would you call it the Northwest Passage? It's of course it's going to just go to shit if you call it that, you know?
Well, I've got to say, the thing that I find the episode riveting, I've always found Scorpion riveting. I still think it's a fun, entertaining Borg episode. But the thing that bothers me about it is this trend that Star Trek kind of got into, maybe right about here, maybe this is the turning point where this happened. The Borg were supposed to be the ultimate bad guys, the ultimate adversary. But at a certain point, that's dissatisfying because now we know how to beat them and we've seen them on screen a few times. So they have to come up with an even worse bad guy and where the stakes are even higher. It can't just be Earth that's in danger. It's got to be the entire galaxy that is in danger now. Like at every turn, they have to up the stakes in terms of what the bad guy or the adversary aliens are capable of and the stakes, you know. And I just feel like Star Trek is in this trend that we need to have a strong adversary. Strong adversary, and a lot of my favorite Star Trek episodes don't even have adversaries. They're bottle shows on the ship where it's all character-driven stuff, and I don't like that trend, you know, just having a bad guy, and then at some point you got to come up with an even bigger bad guy, and then a bigger bad guy after that, and even more danger after that. It's not a trend in Star Trek that I really think doesn't respect the best of what Star Trek is to me. You know, it's Star Trek to me is not really an action show, even when it has some action in it. And so I love the episode, you know, don't get me wrong, but I think this is kind of a turning point where it's like, okay, yeah, the Borg, now we can beat the Borg. What can beat the Borg? Something even better and or worse than the Borg, bigger and badder and meaner and more scarier.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what do? They defang species 8472, like I mentioned. And Amy's like, oh, really? What do they do? Straight yeah, we become friends with species 8472, like, right away. So,
but they defang them in the worst way possible, don't they? Is that the episode where they find the simulation of Starfleet Academy?
Yeah, exactly.
Both being all that and the species 8472 are wearing, like, human skin suits.
In the flesh, yeah.
Yeah, in the flesh. And it's just, like,
yeah, and by the end of the episode, we're friends with species 8472, and it was one big misunderstanding.
Wow.
Yeah, they really defanged species 8472.
Sorry, Amy, spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chakotay's got a species 8472 girlfriend by the end of the episode.
Wow.
You are still better than 7 of 9 being his girlfriend.
Well, okay, so glad that you mentioned that, because it is in Scorpion, the end of part 2, where Chakotay builds the link with Seven and talks her down, right?
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah, to try and stop her and to sever the connection with the collective, you know, because he's trying to get her to step away from the collective. And so, I mean, you could look at it that this is that first interaction. I mean, that's got to be pretty intimate, going into another person's thoughts and their mind, you know, so that this could be the genesis of what we see later in Endgame.
I had never considered that possibility.
I've never thought of that either. Wow. I hope not.
Well, I sort of thought it was, because, I mean, when you link with someone, that's, you know, pretty personal.
Yeah. Yeah, I can
see
that. So
I can see why people are saying Seven and Chakotay, the shipping there.
Hmm.
I don't know. There's Chakotay and Seven shippers, right?
Anyone who wants Chakotay and Seven is wrong. Everyone hates Chakotay and Seven being together.
Oh. Oops.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I saw it here, so.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about Scorpion before we move on to Drone?
I think it's good practical sage wisdom that you generally can't change people's natures.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and just quickly, obviously, because this is where we first meet 7 of 9, what do you think of having 7 of 9 as a character, as a Borg character on a show?
I love it. I mean, I think it's interesting because in every iteration up until Voyager, there was your Spock character, right? So Data was TNG Spock. And I would say maybe Odo would be the Spock because he's still trying to figure out and he doesn't show emotion and whatever. So even though we have Tuvok, I don't see him as the Spock character. I see Seven as the Spock character of learning humanity and learning from everyone, and that she is so used to, you know, holding her emotions. And so I see her as that Spock character way more than Tuvok, which is supposed to be the Vulcan.
I completely agree. I think Seven of Nine brought some much needed exploration of what it means to be human that we didn't really get from Kes or from Neelix or any of the other characters.
The only one that you could have got that from was the Doctor.
Yes, that would be the other character who has just as much growth in that regard.
And in typical Voyager fashion, do everything super big and everything. We have two potential Spock and Data characters.
And it's awesome that they get paired up and kind of explore their, you know, call it humanity in quotes, because the Doctor's not human and Seven of Nine, she's human. But she was bored, you know.
But it's kind of, it's interesting that it's the Doctor that really leads Seven on her exploration of humanity when he is just in the same position of learning what it is to be human when she is already human and he is only styled and programmed on a human.
See, but I think it's funny because he is not trying to learn about humanity, whereas Seven is. So I think that's the difference. And so that's why I think it's so funny that he's teaching her when he doesn't really like humans. He's superior. He knows, you know, just turn me on, turn me off. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a really good call, Seven's addition to the show.
Oh, definitely.
Not so much her jumpsuits. I didn't really buy any of those skin tight jumpsuits, and the giant boobs wasn't really my thing. But yeah. Good call, good character. Jeri Ryan doesn't age like a
No, she's
like
the Picard of Voyager, doesn't really age that much.
So, yeah, good call.
Yeah, definitely a good call.
You know, it's a shame you mention her jumpsuit and how well-dressed, like, B'Elanna Torres and Janeway and even Kes, like, the clothes fit. They weren't the skin tight. They weren't super loose. They were fit. They were functional. That's what you would see on any person in Starfleet. And then you introduce Seven of Nine. What a travesty it was. I totally get it with the, you know, cat suit mentality, which bled into T'Pol and Enterprise. And probably, to be fair, started with Troy. But they had done 3 seasons, right, without the jumpsuit, cat suit. And then they bring her in. So it's sort of that uniform selection was sort of a step backwards.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, so let's move on to Drone. So Drone begins with one of those wonderful episodes in Star Trek that include a transporter malfunction, should we say, whereby Seven's nanoprobe, they get amalgamated or fused with the Doctor's holographic emitter. Is that what it's called? I've forgotten what it's called.
The mobile emitter.
That's it. So he gets infused with the mobile emitter. And then we end up with, you know, the science lab is trying to assimilate Mulcahy, takes Mulcahy's DNA and creates a Borg baby out of it, but a 29th century drone.
How does the Doctor get his mobile emitter back? I forget.
Oh, they probably just like shove his hand in.
They have a backup or something?
No, one dies.
Yeah.
They probably just like yank it out.
Okay.
Yeah, one dies.
I couldn't remember. They were able to salvage the mobile emitter, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you reckon of this episode, Joe?
See the way you feel about Hugh and Iborg, I feel about One.
You think One's cute?
What? There's something about One. He's like Hunky Borg.
Hunky Borg.
No, seriously, there's something big and robust about him. Yeah. I definitely do that.
But cat suits are a problem.
Yeah, I don't go in for boobs so much, so. I like my hunky Borg dudes. Interestingly, Paul Bomer, who played One, also played one of the Nazi officers from
The Killing Game?
Yes, that.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Herogen. I
think he was the one that got B'Elanna pregnant in The Killing Game, I think.
I think you might be right, yes. He was a human. He wasn't a Harrogian. He was human.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though he's like a fascist in this, there's something pleasant about his features.
So did you think that Hunky Borg was overly polite and very robotic?
Awfully helpful for a Borg.
He was a bit, but he was just newly created, and he was kind of force grown into adulthood, wasn't he?
He's eager to learn, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he had that whole thing where he, Seven, injected her with her tubules, her Borg nanoprobe things, and he wouldn't let go. He just wanted to basically take all the knowledge out of her brain.
Yeah.
which was a bit invasive. But yeah, I really enjoy this episode, but I'm kind of stuck because I just want to look at one.
That's really amusing.
I think it's a really cool episode. It's not specifically a Borg episode.
No, it's like a lot of the Voyager episodes that feature the Borg. They're sort of tangentially Borg.
Yeah, I wouldn't call him a Borg drone necessarily, because he's some kind of hybrid between the Doctor's Hollow Emitter and Seven's nanoprobes. So it's something new that's not necessarily Borg.
Mm.
And it's just a story about him. And how they have to... The Borg come in it later with their sphere, and he has to go on and make them fly into that nebula and crush them to death.
Yeah, there's not the problem to solve in that episode doesn't do a thing for me.
No. Amy's disagreeing.
What do you think of the episode, Amy?
Oh my gosh, you guys. This is a Borg episode. Oh my,
Of course it's a Borg episode. But
absolutely love. This is my favorite Borg episode, and that includes my TNG what? Ones.
Really?
Seriously? Wow.
Yes, I was really crying at the end of this episode. It was so beautiful, and I agree. Like, one, he's great, and the combination of the technology and sort of the callback that he grew, you know, from this fetus, which is a callback to Q Who, where we saw those baby Borgs, if you listen to Earl Grey. So I like that he's growing. And what I love about it is that we get this brand new Borg, and we get to teach him. We get to tell him our morals and the story of humanity. And that's why he's not like the Borg, because he has our morals, our history, our culture. And so that's the idea, this utopian idea that even the Borg, you know, the evil Borg, we get to invent this new one Borg, and he gets to learn. And that is our hope and our future that we have in the Borg, that if the Borg could just step away from the collective, they could really see this humanity, this future, this individualism that we celebrate so greatly. I absolutely loved how there was some callbacks to TNG. Like when one, he wanted to follow Seven, and Seven's like, no, stay here with the Doctor. That totally for me was like Before and Data and Nemesis. And so I totally loved that. And I like that he named himself, which was different from Iborg, because in Iborg, you know, Geordi was asking, well, what should we call you? Everyone needs a name. And it was one who came up with his name. No one asked him to have a name, which I thought was a little weird. I loved his self-sacrifice. And I'm going to tear up now. Like, with Seven.
You're really moved. Wow.
I am.
He's a bit like what happens when you take the Borg and you format them. And just
reformat the Borg.
Rebuild them with all your knowledge and your morals, and
make them, and so we get to see
grown in your own image.
The potential of the Borg, yeah. And at the very end, where he's refusing to take down the force field, you know, and then Seven's like, "You are hurting me," and then he says, "You will adapt," and I'm just like, oh. That is so touching and so moving that we get this idea that this Borg could happen. And I love this episode. It's really good. Sorry.
Aww.
I don't think I was as moved by it as Amy was. It's moving, but you're moved to tears. I mean, that's so really, really. It's your favorite Borg episode ever. You're yeah. saying. Wow.
Amy,
I
just thought it was super cool to see
29th century Borg. How much wine have you?
No, I was crying when I watched it the first go around too, but does that not, you are hurting me? Does that not tear at your heartstrings? Like, that's moving.
I mean, it might have been the first time I watched it, but I've watched it quite a few times now.
It is moving. I am moved to a lesser degree than you were moved. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just like Hugh was a friend to Geordi and vice versa, one was like a son to Seven.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I just think it was super cool to see a 29th century Borg, honestly. I mean, that I don't get a lot of like, wow, that's just super cool on its own, for its own sake in Star Trek. You know, that kind of cool factor doesn't really get to me very much. But 29th century Borg, love it.
With its multi-dimensional adaptability.
I don't think it was a 29th century Borg.
Because it's fused with technology from the 29th century.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 29th century technology fused with technology from the 24th century.
No, it's 29th century fused with Mulcahy
and Seven of Nine's nanoprobes.
Right.
So 24th century, like 29th triad. Century means it's like 27th.
We're not taking 26th. The average.
Damn it, okay.
The other thing that I just picked out with this episode is that Janeway says that she either lets it live or murder it, and it's not an order that she's willing to make.
Yes.
Yet she totally makes it in Tuvix.
I don't get that Tuvix murder argument.
Well, I don't either. I'm quite happy that she killed him, but
I don't even see it as being killing somebody. You're just
fixing an issue.
Yeah, you're separating two people that were joined accidentally.
Okay, we're not getting into this Tuvix because both of you are wrong. Okay, so I noticed that in Drone, Seven tells One that Voyager is my collective.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a maths joke, Seven tells One.
And then later, is it Dark Frontier or Endgame? Janeway says, well, Seven just told me the other day that Voyager is her collective. And I was like, no, that happened way back in Drone. So
it could be that she's admitted to Janeway that Voyager is her collective, but she'd only tell that to One.
Okay.
At the start, because maybe she's just not comfortable telling Janeway yet. I mean,
okay. All right. That maybe. Makes sense. Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Because in Dark Frontier, Chakotay reminds Janeway that Seven said, I will betray you at some point. And Janeway says, no, because she just told me that you are now my collective, i.e. Voyager.
Mm.
I think that in general, this for me is one of the things that distinguishes Voyager from TNG. I think generally you get a stronger sense of family on Voyager in general. TNG, they like each other, they respect each other, they play nice together, they're friends, they play poker, but they're not family like Voyager becomes, I think.
They're close work colleagues on TNG.
Yeah, right.
That's how I see it anyway.
Amy's completely disagreeing with me. Hey, I watch TNG too.
I think I get what you're saying. I think there's something about Janeway that is different from Picard. Because Picard was never part of that family. Mind we talked about the poker game and he only joined them in the end of All Good Things. Mm-hmm. I think it's because he never joined them for poker that it took away something from that family feel. If he had been there all along, it might have had more of a family feel. But you're right, there's some kind of maternal aspect to Janeway.
She's like a matriarch of an elephant herd.
You know, it's interesting because I'm watching, you know, like I said, my rewatch, and my friend pointed out, I was like, she's very hands-on, very touchy. You know, I'll touch your shoulder when I'm talking to you.
Like,
and
Chakotay.
We don't get that in TNG at all. So that familiarity, you know, that notion, that motion, you know, lends itself to being more familiar with each other.
And they're just lost. They're lost in the Delta Quadrant. They only have each other, right?
Right. I mean,
they have to be family to each other.
Yeah.
And there's only 130 of them on the ship.
That's true.
Now, Dark Frontier, which is probably my favorite out of all of these episodes, but it's quite close with Scorpion. Dark Frontier is where we see Seven of Nine and the Hanson family and how they get assimilated and how Seven gets assimilated into the collective. Voyager's trying to steal a transwarp conduit to try and get themselves home quicker. And it's also where we see the Borg Queen for the first time since First Contact.
But played by a different person.
Yeah, by Susanna Thompson.
Right off the bat, I have a problem with this episode.
Okay, here we go.
Seven mentions that she was assimilated 18 years before. Right, okay. This is way before the Enterprise-D encountered the Borg. This does not make any sense whatsoever.
I was thinking about this earlier.
So the Borg, it's a little bit difficult. So it was 2354 when the Hansons started studying the Borg. But it was 2365, I think, when Q'hu occurred. So it doesn't make sense as to how the Hansons managed to
know about the Borg. Right, but then, exactly. This makes no sense.
Oh, I never...
A Starfleet ship was assimilated by the Borg in 2362 because Seven was part of an assimilation on... I've forgotten what the ship was called, but it was on Infinite Regress. So that was 3 years before Q'hu. It is very confusing as to how the timeline plays out in that. And I feel like that's just a, let's just forget this. We needed Seven of Nine on the show.
Mm. Right.
Well, you know, like Troy says, we don't have time to worry about the timeline, but.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you know, a little bit of, this is like pretty blatant sloppiness with the timeline, but.
It is, but hey, the Hanson storyline I thought was cool, even though they were probably the most irresponsible parents going to take a six-year-old, you know, to potentially be assimilated.
Yeah, they might as well just beamed her onto the Borg ships and there you go.
or as six-year-old Annika says, assimilated.
Assimilated.
Which I thought was really cute. It's like a forced error, if that makes sense.
Mm. I have a problem with the Raven.
The Raven, yeah.
Yeah, and it's way too big. There's a scene on the ship where there's a layout of it on an Elkar's display, and it looks like it's got three decks or something. It's quite a big ship for just two people to run, essentially. I don't imagine a six-year-old Annika Hansen's going to have a role in the maintenance of the ship.
Well, maybe she's a child slave and like cleans it and does all of that and scrubs possibly, the warp manifolds.
Maybe. But it just seems too big for two people.
Yeah. What did you think of the episode, though, Joe, other than your issue with the Raven?
Yeah, that's kind of besides the point, isn't it? I've noticed there's something Janeway does. Kate Mulgrew is a really good actress. And there's something that she does. It can just be a little tiny look that she gives that conveys so much.
Yeah.
There's a scene specifically where Tuvok comes into the ready room and he says a member of the crew requested a meeting with the captain. It turns out it's Naomi Wildman. And she just gives this little look at Tuvok that says everything, and it's that mother hen look. It's like, sure, okay, I'm free for Naomi, send her in. Which I really, really like. I think Janeway's up there and one of my favourite captains.
I would agree.
I think I've always thought this. If I was to serve with any captain, I think it would be Janeway. Just because I would trust her to get me home.
Mm. Stern but fair. Caring exactly. But
scientist.
Forceful.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I agree with you as well, Joe, with Kate Mulgrew's acting. You can, with that tiny little change in her, the way she looks, she can convey disappointment, she can convey fear, she can convey, what's the word, what's the emotion when you're feeling happy that's not happy? Joy. Yeah.
Happy, joy.
Happy, joy, yeah. So, yeah, it's a wonderful.
Mm.
What about
you, Wayne? In terms of the episode, I really like it. I watched it today and I'm still not entirely sure why Seven decided to rejoin the collective.
That's because they knew the plan. And
was it all just a bit of a feint?
Like, well, the Queen.
Bluff?
What, by the Queen?
By Seven and the Voyager crew.
Well, she was going to spare Voyager if Seven rejoined. The collective. So that would have been a sacrifice on Seven's part. And so that was what was appealing.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, did that move you to tears too, Amy?
No, it didn't for some reason.
Just wondering.
What I liked about this episode, and again, I've only seen Scorpion, Drone, and Dark Frontier, right? So I don't know if there's other episodes, but in that outline, Dark Frontier was the first episode where we are going from defense to offense. Like Janeway, we are going to attack. Yeah. We are not just going to defend. We're not going to try and hold them off. Like we are going out actively, right? To stand our ground and we're going to take this action, which I think is a shift. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I totally could be. But it seemed like that was the first time where finally we're going on the attack and not just trying to defend ourselves.
Sounds like William Wallace picking a fight with the English in Braveheart, as you just described it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, actually. I think it is the first time that we actually see them going out on the offensive, which with the whole idea of defanging the Borg again, it's not like the Borg are attacking Voyager and the Voyager win. Voyager is attacking the Borg and Voyager wins. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it goes to show that they're so confident within themselves and that Janeway is a confident and great captain and Tuvok with his tactics and the engineering skills of Torres, that it just shows that as a Voyager collective, they can actually defeat the collective of the Borg. And that's like how individuality triumphs over the one. Yeah.
Trumps their unity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference in scale to go on. One ship going on offense against the Borg collective as a whole.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were just going to get the little wounded sphere, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they went after the little probe first. They started small by beaming that torpedo on the probe, which I know they call it a probe, but it's still bigger than Voyager.
Yeah.
These Borg ships are all kind of massive in scale. Brilliant tact.
Except for the little training ships, right?
Yeah, the little Borg darts or whatever they're called. Yeah, brilliant tactic by Voyager to beam a torpedo on. We'd never seen that before, so that was cool. And I love that bit where the Borg drone's just staring at the countdown, the little LED bars counting up.
Yes.
Oh,
and they're just like, what do we do? I'm like, oh my gosh.
That just brings me back to the little
pitch increases as well.
Like, yeah. This brings me back to Sonic and Scorpion, though, just quickly, with the drone trying to assimilate the bio ship and just going backwards and forwards trying to assimilate this thing, and it's just not working. It shows that they're actually quite simple.
Yes. And is this so in our timeline, did Tark Frontier show after First Contact?
Everything in Voyager showed after First Contact.
Oh, okay. All right. So is this the first time in Voyager where we have the Borg Queen and she says, I am the Borg, because everything else is we are Borg?
This is the first time we see the Queen since First Contact. So it's the first time the Queen is in Voyager. Yeah.
Okay.
So what did you think about the Queen coming onto Voyager?
I thought it was fine, but I'm fine with the Borg Queen. Like, in my headcanon, I guess is what you would say, like, there's the collective, but it's the collective that is a subset of the Borg species. So in my mind, you have a Borg queen that is over this many, whoever
some
is.
Some group of Borg.
Yeah, some subset of Borg, who's ever in the collective. She's going to be the queen. And then there's a different queen over those who she has the connection with. So I'm seeing that, yes, as different subsets. And so there's multiple queens. And so the queen that we see in Voyager, that happens to be her subset of Borg. And so I'm fine with there being the queen, because that is the queen of that subset. Or I'm fine with there being multiple queens, because there are multiple queens within the set.
Or is it the same queen in some fourth dimension, as the Borg queen implies in First Contact?
Right. Yeah, I haven't gotten that far yet in my set theory.
We don't exactly know how the queen operates things, do we? So it could well be that. It could well be that she's just, like, uploadable. And that every time that the queen dies, like in Dark Frontier or First Contact, she's uploaded into the collective and then put into a body of another species 125, because maybe species 125's biological distinctiveness is the wonderful ability to lead.
What did you guys think about the Iron Man build a queen body feature?
I loved it.
I loved it.
That was cool. Yeah, I agree. It was nifty.
Not as cool as the way they do it in First Contact.
Isn't it the same way?
Still, they bring our legs up and our arms. But does this...
Well, the entry of First Contact with her coming down, like, no one's going to compete with that. But the introduction here on Voyager, that was pretty cool. I liked it.
Well, they did the same thing. They brought the head down with the spine and everything.
Yeah. But, I mean, we've seen it already. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something more organic about it in First Contact.
Yeah, bigger budget.
Yeah, exactly. See, in terms of the queen, I'm okay with the fact there's a queen. I think it would play better if they left the Borg as some kind of essentially overall faceless entity. That's something that you couldn't say, take me to your leader. It was just they're all kind of essentially clones of each other, and they're all just working as one super giant mind. Having a queen kind of makes sense because they are a hive. So if you take an insect analogy, like a beehive or ants, they all have queens. So that kind of makes sense. And different hives will have different queens. Mm. So I get why they've done that, and they maybe wanted to put more of a protagonistic face on the Borg.
The mere act of having a queen that you can talk to, that you can, you know, that in itself kind of defangs the Borg, right? They're not scary zombies anymore. They're just, you know, they're basically a cult with a megalomaniac leader. You take out the leader and disperse the Borg, no problem, right?
Well, yeah, because now we're getting in Dark Frontier the possibility of reasoning with them. Like, there's a common enemy. The enemy of your enemy makes you my friend, right? So, there's now that, okay, we can reason with you, which leads to that defanging.
So, I'm with Joe. I like Zombie Borg a little more than Borg Queen Borg.
I think you can get away with it in today's TV now, of having a faceless group like the Borg without the Queen. I think maybe in the 90s, correct me if I'm wrong, but you probably would have needed a face to talk to portray that. I don't know whether that's TV in the 90s is different, obviously, now.
Well, and I mean, in the best of both worlds, they did have a voice. It was just, you know, the voice of the Borg, you know, you will be assimilated.
Yeah, but they still use Bacutus, didn't have a voice,
Well, not at first. It was, you know, they had this the Borg background inside the Borg cube with a voice booming from it, right?
Mm. Yeah. And I suppose just quickly back to my point about whether she's uploadable, she could have also had the spatial trajectory come the end of Dark Frontier, because we don't know when they assimilated the Sakaarians.
Mm-hmm. So. That's true. I wonder why there were always queens, though.
Why isn't there a Borg king?
Yeah, I'm waiting for Picard season 4, where like a Borg super cube kind of warps into like Earth orbit and like the Borg king's there and he's the king of all the queens.
I think it's to play opposite Picard, right? Yin and yang. So we have Picard and the queen king.
But
type
aren't
of
bees
idea.
All female queens? Aren't the leaders of beehives queens? Yeah. Aren't the leaders of ants queens?
The queen in First Contact is looking for an equal, right?
Mm.
True. Yeah, sort of that king-queen mentality.
So that's why it's like an insect analogy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, insects don't have kings. All the males are just drones.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I still want to see a Borg king. Warp.
It's
warp
Locutus.
In.
It'll be one hunky Borg. Like, hunky king.
Hunky Borg.
And he's got a tiny, tiny little crown that he just wears on the side of his head.
Complete opposite to Guinan's hat kind of thing.
Yes.
What do you think about the Borg Queen as a foil for Janeway?
I don't quite know how to answer that one.
I don't either. I mean,
yeah,
they can match wits pretty well.
I mean, I feel like the Queen she says to Data, doesn't she, in First Contact, that she is the Borg and that she brings order to chaos, which means that she's like over all the collective. It could be that she's become so, okay, I have to defeat Voyager, and got so obsessed with human and etc. that she's sort of come out, and because of Janeway, she's come out to be a queen and started the I sort of pronouns.
Well, the Borg Queen seems to be able to get under Picard's skin a little bit, and not so much with Janeway.
You know, it's interesting because when you ask that question, I feel that, as we talked about before, like Janeway is that mother hen, and she is seriously like taking care of her people. And it almost gets mirrored in the Borg Queen, especially in Dark Frontier, when it's like, you need to save your species, Queen Lady, because your Borg is going to get annihilated by 8472 or whatever it was. And so I think that we get that commonality of we need to save ourselves, that they get to, you know, I think that we get to see that mirrored a little bit more. I think that she, the Borg Queen, sort of takes on that motherly, like, these are my drones, these are my people.
I think comparing Picard as Locutus and Janeway with this Borg Queen, there was a hint of intimacy between Locutus and the Borg Queen in First Contact, as if they were more than just would-be conquerors. There was, but I think with Janeway and the Borg Queen, is there not a bit of competitiveness between them? It's like Janeway's the queen of her little collective on Voyager, and this other Borg Queen is like, no.
Yeah.
More of a chess game. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, moving on to Unimatrix Zero, Joe is pulling a disgusted face. This is the one where Seven somehow wakes up from her regeneration cycle, realizing that she probably hasn't really got into REM sleep because they're seeing other Borg that are in their pre-assimilated bodies, basically. And then the Voyager decides to go and help out because the Borg are trying to take down Unimatrix Zero because it's a threat to their collective. I'm going to start with Joe on this one, seeing as you looked most displeased. What do you think about Unimatrix Zero?
Do you know, is there not something, I don't know, there's something a bit hokey about it. There's this special dream place that Borg drones can go and escape their servitude and become individuals again. They have a place where they...
Don't we all have our little happy place, though, Joe? Come on.
Yeah, no, but if the Vinculum's doing its job, then...
they shouldn't exist.
Exactly, and I'm just like, why would every species dream of this kind of paradise with a beach and...
because it was created for that.
But it wasn't created. It's basically kind of like the ball COVID-19, isn't it? Like, it's a disease that they've caught somehow, maybe in the assimilation process, that allows them to do this.
Yeah. I don't know. I just like...
I love the... there's philosophical issues in it, first of all. Like, you know, how do you know that reality is really real? I mean, all of your reality could be a simulation. So it's got all that philosophy stuff. But I'm a romantic, and I have three words for you. Borg love story. I'm in.
That was the worst part of this episode. Axiom and Seven were the worst part.
No, what?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you, Zach.
Are you kidding me? It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was fun.
No, I loved the idea. And Joe, it goes to our discussion when we talked about Birthright and like, how do we view our dreams? Because I love this idea that the Borg in their regeneration cycle get to dream, right? And yeah, it's a virus, whatever. But when you stop to analyze your dreams and think about them, then that can change, right, your life.
Okay.
Because of what you're thinking about. So I like, and that's why the Borg Queen is so threatened, that it's like, if the Borg remember their dream state, then they're going to remember that they were different species, that they're individuals, that they are not Borg. And so we really need to put a stop to this. And yes, as Zach says, I love the little Borg love story. So I really enjoyed Unimatrix Zero.
I think the problem I have with it is that it does something to kind of essentially defang the Borg, or they can all dream and go back to their rehappy places. if they were really scary and really inhuman, then they wouldn't have anything nice to enjoy.
Well, they don't remember it, do they, when they become...
When they become Borg again, they don't...
It's very existence kind of tells me that there's some seed of hope in there for them. And if they were going to be really scary, then that wouldn't be the case. The only good bit in this episode is where the Borg Queen is going, oh, find another one, blow up the whole ship.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun.
Grid 928.
That was brutal.
14,000 drones.
Yeah.
Boom.
Ooh. She's in it for the long haul. Yeah.
See, this was my favourite episode for the Borg Queen, which is only because some of the things that she says, it's like, shame you're not alive to experience disembodiment. It is the epitome of perfection. When she was taking bits of the brain outside of that Borg to try and find what the issue was for the interlink frequency. And then Janeway and the Queen, like that conversation between them when she cut into the comm system. How are things in the collective, Janeway says, and she goes, perfect for the most part. Voyager. And like the whole thing is just wonderfully tense. And also just shows so much hatred, I guess, towards each other. But that conversation also reminds me of the cordial but underlying chats that Sisko has in DS9. Well, you know how Sisko is always so cordial, but you can see underneath him and Dukat how there's always such anger towards each other. It's cordial, but they hate each other. And that's exactly what we see in this with Janeway and the Queen.
They're dripping with irony and subtext,
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for that, I enjoy Unimatrix Zero. But if you look at it in this list, this is Voyager's Descent.
I can see that.
Got you, yes.
Yeah, I can see that parallelism.
Yeah.
Okay, agreed.
Anything else you want to say about Unimatrix Zero? I mean, two of you seem to really enjoy it, and Joe didn't.
Nope. Borg love story. I'm good.
All right.
It was good.
The fact that we had a Borg love story between drones, that's not scary.
No.
It's not supposed to be scary.
No, that's them as they're,
Yeah, no,
species.
But I want the Borg to be scary. When I see the Borg, I want them to be like, oh my goodness.
Well, they are scary
the
when they're Borg, but they're not Borg when they're inside Unimatrix Zero.
And
you don't buy it. Joe's not buying it at all.
Not buying it.
I was about to move on without saying one of the most important pieces of this episode.
What?
Borg Janeway, Borg Tuvok, and Borg B'Elanna.
Oh, yes! Oh, yeah.
How did I almost forget that?
Oh, yeah, that's good. Borg B'Elanna. She's my favorite.
But they were assimilated, but they still had that little inoculation that the doctor gave them to keep them as individuals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They couldn't have been assimilated too much if they still had arms and legs and eyes and all the
undercover.
The Borg wet stuff.
When I first watched Unimatrix Zero, was that? No, so my first episode was Drive, so it would have been on like a rewatch when I was a little bit older. I thought it was just really exciting that they got assimilated. I mean, what did it feel for you guys, obviously having seen Locutus of Borg in Best of Both Worlds? Like, how did that compare to the assimilation of these guys?
Can we maybe just call it a simulation when you get assimilated?
Okay. When they got assimilated.
Thank you. That's all I had to say.
Oh,
okay, cool.
I just wanted to call it a simulation.
All right.
Fair
enough.
I think with Locutus and Picard, like, that was traumatic. I did not get the trauma with this assimilation. And I'm not sure if because I wasn't watching it first run that I knew we would get Endgame. I knew we would, see Janeway B'Elanna again. So maybe that had something to do with it, but it wasn't as traumatic seeing that as it was and still seeing Locutus of Borg.
Is that because the doctor had produced some magic that was going to inhibit their assimilation? There was no, it wasn't a dire circumstance. Right. It wasn't essentially fatal. They'd defanged the Borg, essentially. They'd taken away their ability to assimilate.
But I don't think we knew that that's what they were planning to do, though, at the end of part one.
Mm.
We didn't know that they were inoculated until part two. All right, let's move on to the last episode. And that's the last episode that we ever see the Borg in their wonderful unicomplex and Borginess. Yeah, exactly. Endgame. I've only got five words that I've written down for this, and that is I tear up every time at the
you
end.
You tear
of it.
Up?
Yep.
At the so end. You and I agree on this. I like Endgame a lot.
There's things that I would have done better for Endgame, but when they get home and they're in the Alpha Quadrant, I can't help myself.
I get you. Yeah.
Even though it lasted like half a second and then the series is over?
Yeah. So Endgame is not without its problems in terms of an episode, but in terms of them getting home, that's why I get upset. But the Borg in this episode, I thought it was great, like the whole plan and destroying the transwarp hub and the conduits, which then is a virus to kill the unicomplex. I thought it was great. I mean, yeah, it's like, oh, we finally, humanity has finally destroyed this menacing alien that we first saw back in Q2. I mean, we don't know if they're fully destroyed because we don't know what's happened afterwards, but you know, it's a crippling blow.
The big question, of course, was, is Voyager going to get home? And this was like, you know, the internet was still pretty new. You know, it had been around, but we didn't have the social media network that we have now. So it's not like you could get spoilers on these kinds of things. I remember having a bunch of people over to watch the last episode of Voyager because it was like, wow, what's going to happen? This was a big event. I had a party for it. You know, looking back on it now, you know, we don't look at it with those eyes anymore. You know, we know what's going to happen. There are spoilers, and you know, it just doesn't have the same kind of innocence watching, you know, the end of a show nowadays. But then this was a big thing. I was super excited about it. I loved it. It was just the build up to it was amazing.
Yeah, I love it. Like, it's up there, like with the three of this era of Star Trek. Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager all have amazing series finales. And this is just as good. And they do it in kind of a similar way that TNG did it, with some timey-wimey stuff going on, and Admiral Janeway from the future with her really cool technology, and then that armoured Voyager.
Oh, that armoured Voyager is amazing.
It's just so cool. It's like something out of a Marvel movie.
I was very hesitant to watch Endgame because, as I mentioned previously, I'm in a Voyager rewatch, and I'm sure that I've seen Endgame before, but it has been so long that when I watched this, it was like I was seeing it for the first time. And I sort of felt like it totally ripped off All Good Things.
Of course.
With the timey-wimey, and that it's so techno-babble, right? And I was like, oh, that's good. They're paying homage. That's how I chose to view it instead of ripping off. So they're paying homage to how successful All Good Things was. And of course, this is just me in my head. But I felt like it was cheating. Janeway going back to fix things the way it should. And so I don't know how I felt about that. But in terms of the Borg and what she was trying to accomplish and shutting down that transwarp thingy almost reminded me of Discovery and the mycelial network. Like, you go in here and it takes you here. And I liked the technology part of it, that whole techno babble. And we can have our cake and eat it too. We can destroy the Borg and destroy the conduit thing and save what she thinks should be the correct outcome. Because right now, she doesn't believe that's the correct outcome. And that is pretty effing hubris of her.
As you were talking, Amy, I think I came up with a Metatrex topic based on Endgame now. I mean, it's a really existential episode in that way. I mean, generally, like in existentialism, your past is kind of what it is. It's done. You can't change it. You can make future decisions going forward, and you can change your reflections on the past, but the past is just fixed. Janeway even refuses to believe that the past is fixed. She's going to go back in time and change it and make it right.
Yeah, and her definition of right.
Does she not even go to the Klingons and steal some kind of time crystal device?
Yeah, with the help of Meral Paris's... As a lieutenant or whatever, ensign or lieutenant or whatever she is. Yeah.
The daughter of Tom and Balana, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What you say there, Amy, about, I mean, obviously Janeway mentions it in the episode, having the cake and eating it. That sort of sums up Janeway as a character, you know, and also Voyager as a show, maybe, that they try and do everything,
mm-hmm.
that ship. And they have to do everything because they're on their own.
Right.
So,
well, just refusing to accept the limitations of that. That's very Captain Janeway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what people have issues with Endgame 4. And I know that's why Suzanne doesn't like it, is because it basically violates all kinds of temporal prime directive. And I mean, there's so many episodes where Janeway is in such blatant disregard of temporal mechanics and all of that. She just wants to ignore it. And she says that in this episode, which at least she's true to her self there, I guess. I don't know. But
yeah.
if they take away all of the timey-wimey aspects to it, and you had the Voyager crew come up with defeating the Borg in the exact same way, it would have been probably, in my opinion, the best episode of Star Trek, if they did it without the timey-wimey stuff.
Although, do you not...
I can agree it would be an improvement.
Do you not need it to explain the technology in order for them to survive?
Not if they... See, there's ways they could have done it. They could have stolen or worked out some of the stuff that maybe one from Drone had. They could have incorporated some of these little elements all throughout seasons 5, 6, and 7 to then build up to that point where they have ablative armor, they have those weapons. You could write a way into it that doesn't involve timey-wimey stuff, I guess.
It's interesting to me, Liam, how different your intuitions are than mine in this regard. Like, I don't care about the beating the Borg storyline whatsoever. I find that's like the least interesting part of the episode to me. Yeah, I like the stuff about the difference between Captain Janeway and future Janeway. I like the emotional stuff with the characters that have died, or Tuvok with his brain
that was
disease
ridiculous.
Oh, see, but I like the emotional reaction to it. I mean, it's good character stuff, regardless of how ridiculous it is. It's good character moments. And I just find the character stuff in this episode way more interesting than anything having to do with beating the Borg.
Which is so interesting that this was voted a Borg episode, when you had mentioned at the top of this episode, there were so many other Borg episodes in Voyager that this would be voted in
and maybe
the
not
Borg
major Borg episodes, but you know, there's definitely other episodes I would have put in the category.
Right,
of
interesting that
plausibly
it made it.
Borg episodes. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you not need all those things, including Tuvok's brain disease that he has, as justification for Admiral Janeway deciding to go back in time? The fact that she's kind of almost broken by the fact that she didn't successfully bring everybody home.
I think she's just made a decision. She can stay with the party line and not break the temporal prime directive, but that's not who she is. She knows she can do something about it, and she just has to make a choice, which is more important to her, the temporal prime directive or saving her friends.
But the problem with that, Joe, what you were just saying there, is that why didn't she go back to just before she saved, or Neelix left, or why didn't she go back before
Joe Carey,
or why didn't she go back to Caretaker right at the beginning and be like, do not do this?
Voyager did not happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that would be the ultimate Voyager reset button, wouldn't it?
Yeah, she turns up in her armored shuttle. Yeah, and fires something at the caretaker's kind of transporter wave and dissipates it.
Yeah. When it comes to brass tacks, what's your guys' view? Did future Janeway do the right thing?
I mean, legally? Probably not.
No. The right thing. You know, who cares about the legals, you know?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I was it right? I don't know. Right to change the timeline for everyone else?
In other words, what would
else?
You have done in her position, Liam?
I don't know.
So they arrived back 2394, didn't they? Before she made the decision, because the episode starts at 2404.
Yeah, yes.
The episode starts at the 10th anniversary of Voyager's return in the year 2404, which means they arrived
back in 2394. Chakotay died in 2394, I think. I don't know. I was trying to work out the years. And
I guess what I'm getting at is, regardless of getting down in the weeds here, haven't you guys ever had a moment in life where it's like you can do the quote-unquote right thing, you know, follow the rules, or you can do the authentic thing?
Well, it's interesting because you've got to have a lot of confidence that you feel that you can change right? And if you don't put forth the effort to change, then maybe that's wrong, right? So by her not doing that, then she's feeling that she's not doing her best. But who's to say that the future that she's in, the current timeline, isn't the right timeline? So it's a tough question.
So Amy, I'm going to start with you, moving on to final thoughts. What are your final thoughts with the Voyager episodes and I guess the Fansets Collective overall?
Well, I think the Fansets as the fan collective set, I'm, again, not that familiar with all of the Voyager episodes, so I'm not sure if the fans chose correctly. I am a little questionable on Endgame, but Scorpion, Drone, Dark Frontier, and Unimatrix Zero, I can definitely see why those are fan favorites. I think each of them are very, very good, with Drone being my absolute favorite. I think in watching all of these and having this discussion, it seems like the Borg are very similar in their philosophy with the Vulcans, that they suppress, and especially shows up in the Voyager episodes, that you suppress your emotion, that you need to be logical, that you need to follow this train of thought. And then the next step is, well, if everyone is thinking logical, then everyone should be thinking the same way. Therefore, we have this collective. So it really goes into what's wrong with having a collective hive mind. And then you get the example of the queen and how twisted she can get. And so it's definitely interplays, and I can see similarities to what we explore with the Vulcans, to what we get with the Borg, where it's like Vulcan philosophy plus one. Like, we're going to just take it to the next level and say, well, if everyone's thinking logically, then everyone's going to be thinking the same way. So we get this collective mindset. I really like the individual versus collective philosophy with that. And I think that's at the heart of what I see the Borg representing, and like how we can, you know, use that in our lives, and like what makes me an individual, but what makes me a part of my culture, my background, my family. So I really have enjoyed this discussion of the Borg and what it brings to us in fandom overall.
Thank you. Joe?
Yeah, I've had a terrible time, and these are 3 hours that I've never getting back, and you guys are horrible people.
Love you too.
Thanks for keeping me up. Yeah, love you too.
Especially as it's like 1:15 in the morning there.
No, I've had a really enjoyable evening. This is the latest time I've ever recorded at, which is fun, in the middle of the night, essentially, because it's 17 minutes past one in the morning. In terms of Borg, it's all right. No, I'm quite happy to do it. In terms of Borg episodes, the Borg really, really evolve from when we first see them in Q-Who to when we finally see them in Endgame. From whatever makeup and black tubes they found in Q-Who to attach to somebody's head and give them some black plastic bodysuits, to kind of fully realised scary zombies with sweaty faces and grey skin, which was a really cool look for the Borg. Do I enjoy the Voyager Borg episodes more than the TNG episodes?
It's not a competition.
No, it is in my mind. I think I do. But I think, like I've said before, I like action a little bit more than character development. Because I'm still a bit of a kid at heart. And I like to see things go kaboom. So, and I think Voyager did that better. And I think Voyager has aged better, yeah, visually speaking. I think if they do Voyager, if they remaster it in Blu-ray, I think it's going to look absolutely stunning.
They did so much in the way of special effects and low-resolution video, way more than they ever did on TNG, and it was a massive effort to rebuild TNG. I think that's never happening.
They keep saying that, but I'm not so sure. I think we'll get Deep Space Nine first, and then we'll get Voyager.
If they're going to try and make the Star Trek universe, they're going to end up doing it to try and keep people interested in the previous series.
Maybe. Get everyone to buy another round of Blu-rays.
Yeah. Your final thoughts, Zach?
Yeah, I have mixed thoughts on the Borg in general. Like I said, I tend to like the TNG Borg better. I like zombie Borgs, but I like the scale of the Borg in Voyager. And yet what I think First Contact, the movie, did so well was taking a single Borg cube, like we saw in The Best of Both Worlds, but making that bigger, scarier, more massive, you know, having a massive presence and a massive scariness from one ship. I think First Contact did that better than Voyager, even Voyager's overall attempted scale. I think bringing Seven of Nine on board, like I said, brought some much needed humanity and insight and inquiry into the human condition that Voyager really needed and didn't have until Seven of Nine. Even though they could have toned down Seven of Nine a bit in season four and onward, you know, unfortunately it was at the expense of character development for other characters in a lot of cases. So it's hard to say, you know, which group do I like better? I think if I'm trying to think, how do I pick which episodes here? I love The Best of Both Worlds. I like iBorg, and I think I have to go with Scorpion and Unimatrix Zero because Borg love stories. There you go. Thoughts on the Borg.
Yeah, I sort of echo what a lot of you have just said. Joe, I'm pretty similar to you. I like episodes that go kaboom. I do like a bit of character development, but I like stuff to happen in my character development episodes as well, which is why I did struggle with some of Picard's episodes and why I guess I struggle with some TNG.
Related to this, this is really important. I think there's character development and there's action, but there's a third part of the spectrum here. It's more like a triangle. The third thing for me is ideas. It's got to have some sort of idea behind it, some concept, some exploration of something. You can do that through action. You can do it through character. But if it's missing that, it's mere character and it's boring, or it's mere action and it's boring for me.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair.
And I think that's what Picard missed. I don't know why we're talking about Picard, but that third thing is what Picard missed. It never went anywhere.
Yeah. I agree with you, Joe. But the other thing is that the Borg have been used, whether it's in a lot of different ways. So whether it's been in the mystery sort of way that I've said about Enterprise's regeneration, to the downright action pieces that you see in Dark Frontier, the Borg love story that Zach goes on about in the Unimatrix Zero, or even like the horror scenes that you see in Scorpion, like, because Scorpion's like a dodgy horror movie in a way. As well as like pulling the bits out in Dark Frontier of brains and Borgs dismembered everywhere. So I think realistically, they're probably my favorite alien species in Star Trek, just because they're so interesting, especially with the individuality and hive mind concepts as well. But I do enjoy the Voyager ones a lot more than TNG.
I think Star Trek has got to get away from this. I think of it as a very kind of ad hoc, artificial way of creating drama. Here's another bad guy out to destroy Earth. Here's another alien race out to destroy Earth. Oh, the galaxy's in danger because of blah, 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 blah. To me, that story gets old, and Star Trek has done it so many times. I wish they would move on and find a different way to generate drama and plot.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit, I was not happy with the all sentient life and all of that in Discovery. And I mean, is a little bit contrived, but
right. That's a good example. Like, it's not just the galaxy that it's in danger now; it's all sentient life everywhere.
Right?
Yeah. At every turn, they have to make it bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'm bored with it.
The next thing will be the whole universe. The expansion of the universe will stop, and it will start to shrink back into the Big Bang. That will be the next series of Discovery you watch.
But for me, the Borg started that process.
Yes.
In Star Trek.
Okay.
It's because Borg cubes are so heavy, they just have really big gravities and just suck the universe back in.
Just one very quick question, yes or no answer to this.
Okay.
Amy, if you could be a Borg for the day, would you? Just for a day?
No.
Okay. Joe?
Yes, because the nanoprobes could fix my liver from all the wine I've drunk during quarantine.
Yeah.
But no, because then you would find out what everybody thinks of you. Unfiltered.
Yeah, but you want drones and you want clones of you, so.
But there'd be like 9 billion old Joe, so that'd be fine. They would all love themselves. That wouldn't be creepy at all.
No, not at all. Okay, Zach.
Yes, it would be like trying LSD once.
The damage that you could do within one day is too much for my conscience to bear.
Okay. No, I'll be a
ball for a day. You could assimilate hundreds of people and then the next day be like, oh, I'm so sorry, I was just curious.
Can I have that day inside Unimatrix Zero?
You just want to be Axum, don't you, and kiss Jerry Ryan.
No, I kind of like the idea of the different phenomena of whatever altered state of consciousness it is to have a collective consciousness. I think that's cool. I'd like to try that for a day.
I'm curious. I would want to, but the damage is not worth my curiosity.
What if we could put you inside the brig like you and, you know, you're harmless?
And still be in the collective? Yes.
Yeah.
What I think is more likely, which I'd be more inclined to do, is to be able to connect my brain to the internet just so I could instantly search for things.
I always thought it'd be cool to have like a little music transmitter implanted in your head so you can just kind of listen to music and only you can hear it, but it's like you're listening to music. I thought that'd be, you know, that's a cool Borg-like idea.
Yeah. I'll take that one. I like that, Zach. Yeah. Or listen to my podcast.
Yeah, as the case may be. Yeah.
It wouldn't be music that had been created yet. It would be specially written for you based on your day. So it'd be like having an orchestra follow you around to produce the soundtrack of your life.
Kind of like a musical space mood ring?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's been fun today talking about the Fansets collectives of the Borg, and specifically the episodes for Voyager, and having you guys on the show, Joe and Amy. Thank you for coming along. But it isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
But of all the Section 31 that we're getting in New Trek, this feels the most legitimate. This feels like the Section 31 that we know from Deep Space Nine, and it doesn't feel like, oh, we're just going back to the well again, because, you know, even Iris said, you know, I know they've used it in the movies, but we created this.
Earl Grey.
Still no clue. I'm going to kick myself when I get it.
Yeah, tell us, Jim.
Kirsten Dunst.
Oh my gosh, of course!
I hate the universe.
Kirsten. Gosh, I knew that. What's wrong with us?
The best Loxana performance in all seven seasons, in my opinion.
Literary Treks.
If this were an episode of Voyager, and I actually think this book would make an interesting episode of Voyager, and like we kind of hinted at, maybe it's very much like an episode of Voyager that we'll talk about. I don't think it would have been called Seven of Nine, right?
No. Now, it would have to have like a one-word title to fit in with most of the other Voyager episodes, so you can't really remember which one it's about.
Yeah, it would just be called Seven. That's what it would be.
To the journey!
She did actually mean what she said back in the space just before they die. I don't know, I just kind of like it. It's just
I'm
going to
tell you I love you just before I die. Not a minute sooner.
It's like, at least I don't have to deal with the ramifications if I'm dead. Well, that backfired.
Or maybe she was just like, at least I don't have to hear him not say it if we're gonna die.
So what you're saying is next time that we ask someone to marry them, or anyone who asks someone to marry them, they should do it on death's door of like some kind of crazy adventure. Like jumping off a bungee jump.
Yes, you're in the middle of being eaten by a shark or something.
I love you, gobble, gobble, gobble.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. It really does help us find more listeners. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party podcast apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact, choose Message to a Trek FM Show, and select To the Journey. That'll come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. Now, Amy and Joe, thank you so much for joining us onto the journey today. We've been going for 4 hours, pretty much. How are you feeling?
Wide awake.
Caffeinated, huh?
You're going to be dreaming about Borg tonight.
Highly.
Yes, Unimatrix zero for Joe.
With a little bit of one.
Joe does not need his happy dream place. He said as much earlier.
I need a lot of one, I think.
Yeah. Just go dress Ewan up as a Borg. See how you go.
Hunky Borg Ewan one.
Where can we both find you on the internet? Joe, you go first.
You can find me on the Babel Conference, lurking about there usually. You can find me on Trek FM hosting Earl Grey. You can tweet me on the Twitter at JoeyJoe77UK. And you can also email me if you like, joepodcasts@gmail.com.
Cool. Amy?
So yeah, you can find us here on the network. And we do Earl Grey, which talks about Next Generation. I am also on the United Federation and Podcast Network, where I host All Good Things with Patrick Devlin. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. And I am also in the Babel Conference, lurking around.
So, Zach, when you're not wanting to be in a Borg love story with Jerry Ryan, where can we find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrex, Trek FM show dedicated to Star Trek and philosophy. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle's just my name, at Zachary Fruling. And how about you, Liam? When you're not stuck in the brig with Hugh, where can our listeners find you on the network and around the interwebs?
Well, you can find the video of me and Hugh on Pornhub, probably.
Hashtag still listening.
You can find me on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me on The Edge, Star Trek Discovery podcast, also on Trek FM. And you can find me hanging around in the Babel Conference.
Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. You could gain a producer credit for To the Journey or another of our Trek FM shows and more, all available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. Well, we would also like to thank our associate producers here on To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of To the Journey and Trek FM.
So join us next time where we'll be trying to squeeze into Seven of Nine's catsuits. But until then, this has been To the Journey.